Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Amud Aleph by the two dots. We are dissecting the Braita that we brought before, and in one section of the Braita says, Anusat Chaviro, Umifutat Chaviro Lo Yisa. If the woman is a rape victim or a seduction victim, then Lo Yisa, the Kohen Gadol, may not marry her. Vim Nasa, if he marries her, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Avlad Chalau, the Chamim or Mim Avlad Kasher. On the other hand, the Chamim say the Vlad is Kasher. Now, yesterday, we discussed the fact that if it was Anusat Atzmo, Ufutat Atzmo, he wasn't allowed to marry her. But if he did marry her, Im Nasa Nasui, he does marry her, then he's fully married. So then, Rav Huna Amar Rav said, well, he has to get divorced from her. It doesn't really mean it. It means if he gets married, he has to divorce her right away. So what's the marriage help for? It helps with the knas, it helps with the fine that he doesn't have to pay that. By the case of Mifuta, Tosafot asked the question, if he has to pay for the ketubah anyway, why is that any different than paying the knas? The knas is basically the monies of the ketubah. So Tosafot comes up with a number of nafkamina between them. But the bigger question now is, why is there a difference between anusat atzmo and mifutat atzmo versus anusat chaveiro and mifutat chaveiro? What was the answer that we gave, why he does not have to divorce the woman when it's anusat atzmo, mifutat atzmo, is because in the end, any Kohen Gadol that marries a Betula, after the first Biyah, he's married to a Be'ula. So the fact that she is a Be'ula now, there's only one Isur. That's the first Biyah that he has, or when he takes her as his wife, that's the Isur. After that point in time, there's no residual Isur associated with this woman. Because anytime, even if he did this right, the woman would have been a Be'ula. So now, if he does it wrong, after first taking the woman, this woman looks like the same as any other woman he would have taken, that was the proper way to take it at Bitula. As opposed to, let's pick an Almana, a Grusha, the status of Almana and Grusha remain with the woman permanently. She's always an Almana, she's always a Grusha, a Chalutza. Therefore, if he continues to be married to her, every moment that he's married to her, there's an Isur persisting through the marriage. So that was the distinction that we drew, and that's why he shouldn't marry her, because she's a Bitula. That's a violation of an Isur Aseh. On the other hand, if he does marry her, then there's no reason to force him to divorce her at this point because the Avera is done. And now what's left is a normal marriage where there is no Isur. But if you say that, why don't you say the same thing by Anusat Chaveiro, Mifutat Chaveiro? It's the same problem. Why is his Anusat Mifuta any better than that of Chaveiro? So there are two general approaches to that. One is to assume that there's another layer of problem here, which is Gnai. That in terms of the Kohen Gadol marrying a Betula, same way that the king's wives or shfachot are only for the king, and another king can take them, ordinary people can't take them, a woman who has had biyah with another man is considered to be a gnai for the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, over here, where it's anusat mfutat chaveiro, there might be a persisting problem, there might be another problem, which is gnai. And that doesn't go away just because he's married her illegally. By his anusat atzmo, futat atzmo, she hasn't had biyah with anybody else. So yes, she's a bi'ula, but still doesn't have that aspect of gnai. There's some that one goes as far as to state or to formulate it in the same way that we formulated the difference between almana, grusha, and anusat atzmo, and futat atzmo, which is that by mifutat chaveiro, anusat chaveiro, it is an isur that persists. It doesn't go away. It's an isur that exists the whole time, and that's what's going to force him to divorce her and not keep her. On the other hand, by the case of anusat atzmo ufutat atzmo, there's only a momentary isur at the time that he takes her. After that, there's no isur. So that creates the difference in this case. Then, the resultant relationship you have here of a machlok between Rav Elezer ben Yaakov and the Chachamim, as to whether the Vlad is a halal or the Vlad is kasher. The question as to what Rav Elezer ben Yaakov thinks by anusat atzmo ufutat atzmo, Tosafot plays around with it and says he's not sure that maybe Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov would say in the other case it's mutar. And he says maybe not. Maybe even there he would agree. And the reason they only argue by anusat chaveiro mufutat chaveiro is to teach you the power of the chachamim that the vlad is kasher. So Tosafot is not clear as to whether this machloket would also apply in the other case by anusat atzmo mufutat atzmo. So now, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that you produce a halal here. Chayin Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Ige de Amre, some say Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, my time ma de Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov's position here that you produce a halal? Sabala ki Rabbi Elazar. He was like Rabbi Elazar. Because we had Rabbi Elazar before, panui habal pnuya shelo l'shem yishut asa zona. That a single man, a single woman, that's not the shem yishut, makes her into a zona. And so now the problem is she's a zona, which is illegal for kohanim to marry. And that's why he produces a halal over here, because she is a zona. Umi savala kavate. Does he really hold like Rabbi Elazar? V'akaimelon. Mishnat Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov kavanaki. We have a basic principle that whenever Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov appears in the Mishnah, we hold like him because he appears very few times, and when he does appear, it's naki, and we pass on like him. V'ilu b'ha amrar amrav amram amrav ein alocha k'Rabbi Elazar. But on the other hand, when it comes to the statement of Rabbi Elazar, then we do not say the alocha is like Rabbi Elazar. So if you're telling me that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's position is premised on Rabbi Elazar, in one place you're paskening like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the other place you're paskening against Rabbi Elazar. So now you have a problem in the psak. Gemara says kasha, that is problematic in this understanding of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's position as to why we produce a halal over here. Ravashi Amar, b'yesh halal michayivei asei kamiflegei. They're actually arguing about something else entirely, which is whether you can create a halal from a chiyuv asei. The violation here is that he has to take bitulam miyamav, and so then the isur is an isur asei. It's an isur that derives from the positive commandment to take a bitula, therefore he must not take a bi'ula. That's an isur asei. Can an isur asei produce a halal? Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov savar yesh halal mechayve asei. He holds there is a halal from chayve asei, and therefore when he violates the asei over here, he's going to produce a halal. Rabbanan Savri, in chalal mechayave asei. It only chalal is produced out of a lot asei, not produced out of a chiyuv asei. My time on the Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's position? Dichtiv. Almanau grusha v'chalala zona et elo lo yikach ki im bitula me'amav yikach li'isha. So here, the pasuk, the way it's laid out, has almanau grusha v'chalala zona. All these individuals may not be taken as a wife, lo yikach, the lo taseh, then ki im bitula me'amav yikach isha. Yes, the positive statement which gives us the inference that a bi'ula would be problematic. Uchtiv, the subsequent pasuk is velo yichalel zaro bi'amav. So the halal is the subsequent pasuk. Now truthfully, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is the easier reading of the psukim here, because if you look at the psukim, you have amna grushav chalav zona, then you have the assay of bitula, then you have lo yichalel zaro. So if I was to think of lo yichalel zaro, what does it reference? It seems it references at least the last thing in the previous pasuk, but maybe even everything else. That means that for sure bitula is covered in that situation. So therefore, it goes al kulu, goes on all of them. Rabbanan ele hifsika inyan. Rabbanan said that ele blocks the inyan. So it's still a difficult limud. Well, I'll show you in Tosfot in a second, but here, look in the pasuk, says amanav grusha v'chalaz zona et ele lo yikach. So only these have the subsequent din. Even though the din of bitula is written afterwards, between that and the din of lo yichalel zaro, nevertheless, Eile defines which ones are considered to be problematic that will connect to lo yichalel zaro. Tosafot already says, wait a minute, Eile yifsika inan, velo mukminen lo yichalel abi'ula, afogav demina salik. Even though that's the end of the pasuk, the chachamim say we're not connecting lo yichalel to that. Mishum de mistaver tvei lukmei achai vilavin. It's more logical, makes more sense to put it on a chiyuv lav. So in the end, he has to overcome what seems to be the Pashtuta Pasuk and say that Eile tells us that these are the more severe or problematic marriages, and therefore they're governed by Lo Yichalel Zaro. But if you look at the Sukim just as Pashtut, it looks like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is right. You ended off with Bitula, then you went into Lo Yichalel Zaro. It seems like it should be. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar, Eile Limu'utei Nida. Eile come along here to exclude a Nida. Now, why you need to exclude a nidah is somewhat difficult, because we know that a halal can only be produced from an isur kihuna, not from a regular isur. Halalim are only produced if a kohen marries a woman who is otherwise a surah le kihuna, not because she's a surah in general. If she's a surah in general, you might produce a mamzer, but you're not going to produce a halal. Halal is because of isur kihuna. So why you have to be ma'id nidah is somewhat difficult. Tosfot already asks the question, and he says, "B'torat kohanim efreish d'itzrich d'loin elif d'avei chalal mikal b'chomer mehani." So maybe you learn it out as a kal v'chomer from these other three that you could learn out to nida, even though it's not an iser kuhuna. A lot of the Rishonim explain here that the Gemara is establishing this fact. It's establishing the fact that all chalalim are produced through iserei kuhuna by excluding nida. And by saying that nida, we know from before in the Gemara, nida is not a zonah. And nida now will not be an iser chalal. And that shows you that the only way you produce a halal is through a iser kihuna. So this is actually the source for the limo that we're asking the question on the Gemara from. So that's how some of the other Rishonim deal with it. Kerman Azla, Hadetanya, who does this bright to fall? Me'ila atase halal, vi'atase halal min nida. Kerman, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. That bright to sounds exactly like Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, that the word eila here is used to exclude a nida. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, nichteve le'ila b'lebesof. According to Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, La'ilah should be written at the end of the Pasuk. If you're going to say that Eila incorporates everything, and that's what's Lo'yeh Halel Zaro, should have put it at the end of the Pasuk. Kasho. That's the difficulty in Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov. It's interesting, again, that the Gemara takes that as a problem for him. Again, his reading of the Pasuk is more simple, which is that you have Eila, plus you have the Asay, and all of them are covered by Lo'yeh Halel Zaro. But the way the Gemara learns the word Eila being the pivotal issue here, as to which ones are Lo'yeh Halel Zaro, then according to Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, it should have been at the end of the Pasuk to incorporate all the items that are in the Pasuk, and that's Akasha. So according to both explanations that we had so far about what is the position of Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, we have at least one problem, that we end up with the word Kasha in both of these instances. Now, Tan Rabbanan, Achuto Arusa, his sister who is an Arusa, Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Yehuda Omrim Mitameila, he is Mitamei for her, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, ain mitamei la, is not mitamei for her. So the question here is with regards to a Kohen. A Kohen is allowed to be mitamei for his seven relatives, seven close relatives. It's mother, father, son, daughter, then you have brother, sister, and wife. So those are the seven Krovim. As far as his sister is concerned, by his sister it says that if his sister is not married, then he is mitamei la. If she is married, then he's not mitameila. So the sister that he's mitameila is limited or qualified by that statement about where she is. This has to do with a broader discussion that we mentioned once before, which is also the wife and the sister. Both of those are the same question, which is, when does the wife transfer over from her family into the husband's family, and therefore he's going to be mitameila, and she's really a part of the husband's family? And the same is true in the reverse, which is Achoto is just a reflection of that, is when does his sister leave his family to be a part of her husband's family and not be a part of their family? And that's the question here. So then you have to ask, which one is more obvious to include? The Gemara in Moed Katan, when it discusses this, there are those that say there are only six, there are only five. So which ones are the ones that you leave out, or which ones are not as obvious? And that's Machloket. You see the Rambam and the Ramban arguing about which is more obvious, or which one belongs more in the husband's family, which one belongs in the other family. But here, the Gemara is asking this exact question. As far as Achoto is concerned, when does she no longer part of his family that he's not mitameh for her? When is she considered to have left the family? Over here, she's an Arusa. So she's engaged to go to this other family to be married to her husband. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda say that he's mitameh la. She's still considered to be part of the family that she comes from. His family, her brother, will be mitameila. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi ain't mitameila. She's already part of the other family. They can no longer be mitameila. Achuto abitula. That's when he's allowed to be mitameila. So that's one issue. The second issue is if nitma umma or nitkarsha. If she's widowed or divorced, she returns to the family, and again, she might be part of the family that they'll be mitame for her. So what seems to be is that if there was bi'ah here, he is not mitameila anymore. That is a given. Arusa, we have a machloket over here. The one case that is not addressed is, what is about a nisu'ah without bi'ah? So a nisu'ah without bi'ah, the Rishonim argue as to whether a nisu'ah without bi'ah, he would be mitameila, or no, that's already considered to be part of the other family. He would not be mitameila, unless nitalma v'nitgarsha, and she's still a bitula. So that's the Mechlog Rishonim as to where is that crossover point where she for sure belongs to the other family. Now, Anusa Mifuta, Divrei Yaakov, Ein Mitameila. Anusa Mifuta, which means if his sister was raped or seduced, she's no longer a Bitula, and therefore he will not be Mitameila. Umukadeitz, Ein Mitameila, Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Since she's not a Bitula, therefore the Kohen would not be Mitameila, because she's no longer an Achoto, a Bitula. So now that might connect us to the previous Gemara where Rabbi Shimon also spoke about it. Shaya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ruya the Kohen Gadol mitamela. Shein Ruya the Kohen Gadol ain't mitamela. Very easy. If she could marry a Kohen Gadol, then he's mitamela. If she can't marry a Kohen Gadol, he's not mitamela. So that's maybe what connects us to that previous Gemara. Ubogeret mitamela divri kol adam. Everybody agrees that a bogeret is still mitamela. I mean, that she's still considered to be enough of a bitula that you will be mitamela, the brother will be mitame for her. As opposed to by Kohen Gadol, where Rabbi Meir disagrees and says he cannot marry her, over here, he will agree that the brother is mitamela when she is a bogeret. So my time of the Rabbi Meir of Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's position? The Darshi Hachi. This is their drasha. Chutah betula is prat lanusa umifuta. That excludes the case of anusa mifuta because she's no longer a betula. Yochoshani motziyaf mukateitz. You would think we'd exclude mukateitz as well. Tamalomar asher lo haitali ish. So even though it's outside the context of marriage by anusa mifuta, it's still haitali ish. It's a havaya by an ish. She lost her betulim through an ish. That's enough that he will not be mitamela for her anymore. So in this instance, as soon as she is a bitula, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda believe that as far as losing her bitulim, as long as it came through an ish, you will not be mitamela. If it bukadeitz didn't come through an ish, then you will be mitamela. Yatzazu she'en avayatayi de'ish. Hakrova means that it's close to him, l'rabo ta'arusa. To tell you that even by an arusa, he will be mitamela. Ilav, l'rabo ta'bogeret, to include a bogeret. So here you have a pasuk, which is lachoto abtula, akrova, ilav, ashalo italiish, that sister that he's mitameila. So that sister includes any sister who is a bitula. Even if she's not a bitula, as long as she didn't lose her bitulim through an ish, he still will be mitameila. In addition, an arusa will still be mitameila, that's krova. And then bogeret will be included here because we have a ribuy of a lav. Ha lamali kra. Why do you need a pasuk? Vama rabbi mer, bitula. Afilu miksat bitula mashma. Wait a minute. Rabbi Meir in this story by the Kohen Gadol says that the word bitula, the default word bitula means any amount of bitulim, including a bogeret. Then we said it says bituleha and bitula. He had another miut that said, okay, the bitula would have included a bogeret. But then bituleha comes, that extra yud comes and excludes a bogeret. That means the default definition of the word bitula is including a bogeret. So why do I need a pasuk to say to me that bogeret's included here? That would have been the word bitula, would have meant bogeret. Itzrich, saka dat chamin enilef bitula mihautam. I would have thought we learn out bitula from there. Rashi says from there means from ones, the case of rape, by a nera mirurasa. You might say, ish nera bitula amirurasa li ish. So that case is a bitula, which is a ne'ara, not a bitula that's a bogeret. So I will learn from there. Tosafot disagrees and says mehata means the bitula by Kohen Gadol. Even though the word bitula by Kohen Gadol still means any bitula, it's only because it says bitula that we changed it. Nevertheless, now the definition of bitula by Kohen Gadol is not a bogeret, according to Rabbi Meir. So we would have thought we would have brought that over from Kohen Gadol to here. Ma halan nara, afkan nami nara, whether according to Rashi that means by nara meruasa, or here by Tosafot it means Kohen Gadol. Kamash balan, the pasuk says don't do that. And that it's different over here by Achuto. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, my Tanayu. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon's position? Darshi Yochi. Ula Achuto abitula, prat lanusa, umifuta, umukadetz. That comes to exclude the case of anusa, mifuta, and mukadetz. They include mukadetz there. It's being excluded because she's no longer a bitula. Asher lo aita, prat arusa. That asher lo aita liish is not that the bitulim were lost by an ish. But haita is like havaya by erusin. That means as long as she hasn't had erusin with an ish, then he's allowed to be mitamela. Over here, it's prad arusa. Akrova, the rabot arusa shenitgarsha. Krova tells you that if she's divorced from the erusin, then she does come back and he's mitamela. Elav, the rabot et abogeret. And then elav comes to include a bogeret. Haro krova, the rabot arusa shenitgarsha. Akrova comes to include an arusa that shenitgarsha. Vama Rabbi Shimon. Ru'uya the Kohen Gadol mitamela. Shein ru'uya the Kohen Gadol ain't mitamela. Didn't Rabbi Shimon already establish a principle that any woman who could marry a Kohen Gadol would be ru'uya for the brother to be mitamela? Clearly over here, if she's divorced from the Erusin, she's not ru'uya the Kohen Gadol. So Mar says, and the other way around, she'en ruya lekohen gadol like a grusha, ein mitamila. Shani hotam derabi rachmana krova. You're right, that is the principle, but here the pasuk overrode the principle. The principle is that if she's ruya lekohen gadol, that's how you'll know. But in this case, the pasuk has a riboy that says, even though she's nitgarsha, since it was mein arisim, and she's still a bitula, therefore, you will be mitamela. Ihachi mukadeitz nami. So by Mukadeitz say the same thing. Rabbi Krovachat Velo Shtayim. Similar to the limur we had yesterday by Isha Achat Velo Shtayim. That the word Isha, we have one riboy from the word Isha, and the other Isha is a miut. So to over here, one of the things is Mirubeh, and one of them is excluded. So now the Gemara says, Umarayita, how do you know to include an Arusa who is divorced, that he is Mitameila, and a Mukadeitz to exclude her and say he's not Mitameila? How do you know which one is which? Ha itavid b'amase, ha lo itavid b'amase. It's a very simple. By mukat eitz, something physically changed about this girl. So even though it didn't come through bi'ah, but the fact that she lost her betulim is a physical change, and therefore he will not be mitameila. On the other hand, erusin creates no physical change in the woman. Erusin and then divorce, there's no change. She's the same woman she was before, and therefore he will be mitameila. Even though she now has a shame grusha, where she can't marry a kohen or a kohen gadol, nevertheless, in terms of her physical standing, which is what this pasuk seems to put an emphasis on, which is that she's a betulah, there is no change, and that's why we include one and not the other. That's the machloket that we have here. In 1 second, we'll deal with Rabbi Yosef's shita, but what you see here, and what seemingly is happening here with regards to arusa, I mean, the pasuk says that a betulah, he's mitameila. So, in general, you would have thought that in terms of erusin, there's no reason he shouldn't be mitameila. Why is erusin in play here? Because Arusa is definitely a bitula, and since she's a bitula, why can't he be mitameila? So what you see here, and this might be the core machloket between these two sets of Tanaim, is what is the default status of the woman in the Erusin situation? When she's an Arusa, is she still part of her original family? And therefore I would need a pasuk to push her out? Or is it the other way around? She's assumed that she's an Arusa, that she's part of her husband's family, and now I need a pasuk to pull her in. And that might be how they're dealing with it. Where is the arusa as a default? And then what is the pasuk doing when it's addressing the arusa? Is it pulling her back or pushing her out? But it might have to do with where the starting point of your thought process about an arusa is. Which family is she in at the time of irusin? That's a machloket rishonim. Rishonim say that a nisua who didn't have bi'ah, he would be mitameila. But if they had bi'ah, then she's no longer a bitulah, he would not be mitameila her. If she's married, was fully married, and then nitgarsha, he does not mitameila. She might get truma when she comes back to her father's house, but he cannot be mitameila her, the brother, because she's not a bitulah anymore. Rabbi Yossi, midashavke the barzugay, Rabbi Yossi who left his partner, because Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon are of the same opinion in the Braita, vis-a-vis an arusa. They both say, ain mitameila when it's an arusa. Yet at the end of the Braita, only Rabbi Shimon says Mukadeitz is a problem. Rabbi Yossi does not think that Mukadeitz is a problem at the end of the Braita. Rabbi Yossi is in consonance with Rabbi Shimon, but he doesn't agree with that last piece of Rabbi Shimon, because it only says Rabbi Shimon, not Rabbi Yossi, says Mukadeitz is a problem. So now, me to Shavkei, the Barzukei, Michlau, to Mukadeitz, Rabbi Meir is fearle. Pretty clear then that Rabbi Yossi holds like Rabbi Meir with regards to Mukadeitz, which is Mukadeitz, he can be Mitameila, that it's not considered to be a Be'ula. Minole, where does he have that from? Because he learned the pasuk like Rabbi Shimon. He learns the pasuk like Rabbi Shimon. What does he have left over to teach him that Mukadeitz is okay? Says Melohai Tali Ish. Then he learns that out of Melohai Tali Ish. Ish is the only one who can make her ibitula, or basically into a biula, not Mukadeitz. Vaha Fikte. Wait a minute, you used that. He already used that Vaitali Ish to teach you about Arusa. Arusa, you're not Mitame law because Vaitali Ish. Once there's a Havaya, once you have a Havaya with Ish, then you're not Mitame law. So Gemara says, Chad me lo haita, mechad me li ish. Break it down. Lo haita teaches you about erusin, and ish teaches you about mukadeitz. So he has two limudim out of this. Elav, the rabot bogeret. Elav at the end of there tells you to include a bogeret, that a bogeret is included in those that he is mitamei for. Va'ama Rabbi Shimon, bitula, bitula shlema. Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar in our Mishnah say that the word bitula means a bitula shlema. Then they had to have a riboy to include a mixat bitula, and that's how they included bogeret in our Mishnah. But that means that the default word bitula means only full bitulim. Bitula, bitula shlema mashma. So if that's the case, over here where it says that she has to be a bitula, how could he say now that it's a bogeret is okay? For him, bitula means full-fledged bitulim, and that means only a ne'ara, not a bogeret. So tamad didei nami hata mihacha darish rachi. That reason over there that he says the word bitula by default means full bitulim is because of the drasha over here. Midei elav the rabot bogeret. Since in our case over here the word elav comes to include a bogeret michlal, would you infer that the definition of the word bitula means bitula shleima? So if that's the case, then bitula shleima is an inference out of the word elav, which means bogeret. So if you have bogeret over here, then the definition of the word bitula must be that it is bitula shleima. That's why I needed a riboy over here. So therefore, when I go over to Kohen Gadol and I use the word bitula, it means bitula shleima. But then again, I'm going to have to need another word, then a miut, to make it into a bogeret, which is interesting dynamic now, because the question you could ask is, why don't you just learn bitula, bitula from here, and then you wouldn't need the bituleha, the extra yud. Tos would say, Zeno Hanami, you could have learned it that way, but they need the extra yud to get to the bet, which is extra also. Biftuleha, the bet wouldn't be extra unless the yud was there, so they needed to have the yud in there to get to the bet. It's an interesting answer, but what we see from this is that Rabbi Shimon thinks the default in bitula means a ne'ara, and therefore you need another riboy in both instances to change it over to a bogeret. By Kohen Gadol to say a bogeret is okay, and over here to say that a bogeret is allowed to be mitamei la. Right now, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon by Yochai Omer, what this Gemara is doing over here is not so clear, because we are not talking about Gioret. The main sugi of Gioret is in the Gemara in Kiddushin. It's not Shayach over here. The only thing you could say is that the word Kihuna at the end over here means Ro'oi Lekuna Gedola. If you do that, then it makes sense in the context here, because we've been talking about what's Ru'iyah Lekohen Gadol, so too over here. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says a Gioret Pachuta Mibat Shalosh Shanim Yom Echad Kshera Lekuna Shinemar. Because the pasuk says, "V'chol ataf b'nashim asher lo yadu mishkav zachar hechayu lachem barei pinchas imahem." It says, "By Midian, the captives of Midian, you're allowed to keep any taf b'nashim asher lo yadu mishkav zachar that they didn't know any male hechayu lachem. You can keep for yourselves." Pinchas is the commander of the army over there, and that would support this idea that it's even for a kohen gadol. But Pinchas is clearly a kohen, and he will be a kohen gadol later on. So therefore, they are reuim for Pinchas. Even though they're coming from a foreign nation, they are going to be giorot. Rabbanon, lavadim u'lishpachot. Doesn't say you have to marry them. It says lachem, that they're for you. For you, the way Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is reading, it means for you to marry. And then on the other hand, the chamim say for you means for you to use. You'll utilize them as avadim and shpachot. So it doesn't prove anything about a marriage of a kohen. The question, or the core question at hand here is, what is the problem of giorot vis-a-vis a kohen? Why can't a kohen marry a giorot? Rashi, many places in Shas, mentions that the problem is zona. That a giorot is classified as a zona, and therefore she is psula the kuna because she's a zona. And as a zona, we have a restriction that a kohen can't marry a zona. So it's subsumed under the category of zona. The problem with that explanation is, then Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's statement should be obvious, which is that under the age of 3 years and one day, she automatically should be okay, because everyone agrees that biyah under the age of 3 years and one day is not considered to be a biyah. If that's the case, she cannot be a zonah under the age of 3 years and one day. By definition, she won't be a zonah. The second question is, a gioret is kikatan shenolad dami. She's like a newborn baby when she converts. That means that even if she garnered the status of zonah while she was a nachrit, once she converts, she should lose that status of zonah as a newborn baby, and therefore, why does her status as zonah when she's an achrit impact here in terms of marrying a kohen? Those are the two questions on Rashi's Shita. Therefore, most of the Rishonim lean differently, and they based it on the pasuk in Yechezkel. Pasuk in Yechezkel, which is discussed in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which the pasuk in Yechezkel says that the kohanim will marry a betula mizera bat Yisrael. That she'll marry a betula that is a Jewish descendant. So based on that, the Gemara learns there, Gemara in Kiddushin argues about exactly what it means, but there the word Zera Bat Yisrael. So from that pasuk in Yechezkel, it seemingly is telling us that they have to marry someone of Jewish lineage, not someone that is a Gioret. And that's how most of the Rishonim learn here, that the problem here is that problem from the pasuk in Yechezkel, not a problem of Zonah. The Ritva has an interesting in between status, which is that the word zonah that we've been using over here does not mean zonah in the classic sense, but zonah is in reference to a non-Bat Yisrael. Basically, what the Pasuk in Yechezkel does for us is define a Zonah as anybody who's not Zera Bat Yisrael. And so therefore, Zonah takes on a new meaning. It's not the standard meaning of Zonah. It has also a meaning. Zonah will also include anybody who's not a Betulah Zera Bat Yisrael. So that's how they learn, or these Rishonim learn, that the problem is over here. And here you have a machlok between Rabbi Shimba Yochai and the Chachamim as to when that problem starts. Rabbi Shimba Yochai says that only starts after 3 years in one day. Chachamim seem to say that even lower that age, it's a problem. Again, for Rashi, that's difficult because under that age, there's no biyah, so why do the Chachamim disagree? So now the Pasuk says in Bijan, they're arguing about, what does it mean for you? The Rabbi Shimba Yochai says for you to marry. And the Chachamim say, no, it's for you to use as servants and maidservants. So when it says, "Hi hochi bat shloshanim v'yom eched nami," so why not at 3 years in one day, why not also can't you marry them? As long as they are betulah, why can't you marry them? In the case of Rav Huna, that's because of Rav Huna. The Rav Huna Rami. So now Rav Huna is going to explain to us where this threshold of 3 years in one day came from. As far as Rav Shimba Yochai is concerned, as long as they're lo yadu mishkav zachor, as long as they didn't have bi'ah, they should be muteret. Why is it that they are not muteret? So that is comes out of this limud of Rav Huna. Rav Huna says there's a stira on the psukim. It says, k'tiv, kol yisha yudat ish mishkav zachar harogu. It says that any woman who had known bi'ah from a man has to be killed out of the captives of Midian. Ha'enu yodat kaimo. So from here, the inference would be that as long as she was a bitulah, you would be allowed to keep her. Michlal de'ataf. When it comes to youngsters, ben yadu, ben lo yadu, kaimu. Because that pasuk says isha. Isha implies a woman of age. So by a woman of age, you would assume that there's a differentiation between whether they had biyah or they didn't have biyah. But a taf, someone who's a ktana, it'd be irrelevant if they had biyah or not had biyah. Uchtiv. But then we have another pasuk that says, v'chol taf benashim asher lo yadu mishkav zachar. Any ktana who didn't have biyah, echiyu lachem. You keep around for yourselves. Ha yadeh. But if you had they known biyah harogu, then you would have killed them. So, Avi Omer, how do you reconcile that? The diokat of one pasuk is that a ktana who had biyah is kept. The diokat of the other pasuk is that a ktana that had biyah is killed. So which one is it? Avi Omer, biruya libael akatuv midaber. The solution to the problem is the word yada, not to be the classic sense of yada, bi'ah, but yada means ri'uya li'idiya. Someone who is ru'uya li'bi'ah, not someone that is not ru'uya li'bi'ah. So Tanya Nami Ochi, you have a breita that supports that understanding. Cholisha yudat ish biruya li'ba'el akatub midaber. Doesn't mean that she actually had bi'ah, it means that she was ru'uya li'ba'el. How do you know? Maybe it means nivala mamash. Because of the stira from the other pasuk, the only way to reconcile the stira is to say that yada means ra'uya libael and not actually libael. So that means that the threshold here, the solution to the problem is yidia here does not mean literally they had biya, but rather that they ru'iyim libiya. And therefore, there will be a threshold. Taf b'nashim, asher lo yadu mishkav zachar. Youngsters that are not ru'uyim libael, where are they not ru'uyim libael? That's 3 years in one day and younger. 3 years and younger, they're not ru'uyim libael, you'll keep around. Taf, over that age, which are ru'uyim libael, they will be killed like the isha. So therefore, you have both yukim are correct. Some of the taf are kept, some of the taf are not kept. What's the threshold? 3 years in one day, because the difference between whether they're ru'uyim libael, not ru'uyim libael, that's the source. Rabbi Shimba Yochai's distinction of 3 years and one day, where they're problematic, and under that age, where they are okay. Minayade. How do they know whether they were ruim libael or not? So Amar Avuna Bar Bizna Amar Rabbi Shimon Chasida Yivirum Lifnei Atzitz. They brought them in front of the tzitz. Kol Shepaneh Morikot Biyadua Shi Ruya Libael. Anybody whose face turned a little yellowish, then you knew that they were ruim libael. Kol Shepaneh Morikot. Anyone whose face did not change color, but yadua shein ruya libael. That was the test that they used. Am Rav Nachman, siman l'avera hadroken. Avera are dealing with gilui arayot. That the siman for a person who's a balei avera is this hadroken. What Rav Nachman says over here, that siman l'avera is hadroken, because p'neim shovrei avera morikin. Their face changes color. Now the truth is that there's two different diseases, yirakon and hadroken. Yirakon is like a jaundice type disease where you actually change color. So yirakon is the one that really talks about a yellowish or greenish tint. to one's appearance. Hadroken is really a stomach ailment or an intestinal ailment of some sort, or a dropsy. Nevertheless, Tosafot points out that maybe there, Hadroken lav hayne yirakon, but there's sat yesh lahadroken yirakot panim. There's still a little change in the person's complexion from Hadroken, and therefore, Rav Nachman is learning this out of the fact that when you pass in front of the tzitz, your face changes color. That has to do with this issue of Aveira. Really, in the Baal, he connects the two together. So now, Kiyosu Bedarvar, Ata Omer, we find a similar incident. By Vayimtsu, Miyoshve Yavesh Gilad, Arba Meot Ne'ara Betula, Asher Lo Yadu Ish, the Mishkav Zachar. So here we have a case by Yavesh Gilad, who did not show up to fight against Shevet Binyamin in Pilegesh B'Giva, and they took a Cherem at the time, they took a Shavua, that whoever didn't show up, we're going to wipe them out. The people of Yavesh Gilad did not show up. The reason they don't show up is because Yavesh Gilad has a very strong alliance with Binyamin, because Binyamin or Shaul had taken care of them in the earlier years, and later on, they're the ones who took care of Shaul. When Shaul and Yonatan are taken by the Plishtim, the people of Yavesh Gilad come and take back their bodies and bury them. And David compliments the people of Yavesh Gilad for their concern over Shaul and Yonatan. So Yavesh Gilad doesn't show up to the battle because they don't want to fight against Binyamin. So now there, they wipe out the whole city, except for 400 women, Narot Bitulot. Asher lo yadu ish tamishkav zachar, minayode. How did they know? And Rav Kana, shivom al pi chavit shel yayin. They set them on top of a wine barrel. Bi'ula rechanudev. Bitula in rechanudev. So the understanding or their belief is that the bitulim block the wine or the smell of the wine coming up through the woman. If she has bitulim, then the smell won't reach her mouth or her upper part of her body. And so therefore you'll know that she is a bitula. If the wine smell comes up through her mouth, then she's a bitula. There's nothing blocking the wine from coming up. I'm not going to discuss what this means about their understanding of anatomy, but it seems to be a mistaken understanding about how the anatomy works. V'navrinu lifnei tzitz. Why don't they just take them in front of the tzitz? That'd be an easier solution to the problem. Why are they using this barrel test? Amrav kanabrei the Rav Natan lirtzon lahem. The tzitz is l'ratzon lahem, k'tiv. L'ratzon v'lo l'puranut. It's only in a case where it's l'ratzon and not for puranut. Yachi b'midjan nami. Wait a minute, by midjan, they're also using the puranut. They're going to kill all the girls who the tzitz doesn't approve of. So over here too, in Yavesh Gilad, they're going to kill anybody who's not a narab betula. So Ravashi lahem, k'tiv. Lahem l'ratzon v'lo l'puranut. When it comes to Jews, it can only be l'ratzon, not the puranut. L'ovdei kochavim afilu l'puranut. When it comes to ovdei kochavim, then it's even puranut. So by midjan, where you're dealing with non-Jews over there, the tzitz can work, whether it's for the good or for the bad. In the case here, where it's the girls of Yavesh Gilad, who are Jewish girls, there it only works the Ratzon and not the Puranut, so they have to come up with a different test. Amar Rabbi Yaakov Baridi, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Halacha to Rabbi Shimon ba Yochai. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ba Yochai. Amar Le Rabbi Zeira, the Rabbi Yaakov Baridi, Beferish Shmielacha, O Michlala Shmielacha. Did you hear this directly from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? Or do you infer this from a statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi? My klala, what is the inference? The Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Irachat Aita Be'eretz Yisrael, Shikar Alea Ar, there was a problem, Vishiger Rabbi, et Rabbi Romanus, or Romanus, Ubadka, Umatza Babat, Gioret Pchuta Mibat Shloshanim Biyom Echad, Vechshira Rabbi Lekeuna. So here's a case where Rabbi sent one of his Talmidim up to this city, and in that incident, they found a girl who was a bat gioret, pchuta mibat shloshim biyom echad. And Rabbi says she's perfect for the kuhana. Over there, you see that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is telling the story. And from that story, it would imply that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is saying that a bat shloshim biyom echad is fine, like Rabbi Shimon ba Yochai. So is it an inference out of this story, or did you hear it directly from him? He answers, beferush shmi'ali. He says, I heard it directly. Even if you heard it from the inference, why is that a problem? Rabbi Shimon Levi does say that in the Braita. Dilma shiny hotam ho v'insiv insiv. Over there, the woman was already married. So once she's married already, we're not going to force him to divorce her at that point in time, because he married her already. Taha rav Rabbi Yochanan damrei tovayu bugaret mukadetz lo isa. They may not married. V'im nasa nasoi. If he's already married, then she's married. Rabbi says, v'chiyashta, how can you compare those cases? The reason over there was because the problem is only a momentary problem. It's a problem at the moment that he takes the woman. Afterwards, a woman that was a bitula and a woman that was a bula looks the same the day after the marriage. So that's why we said over there that he doesn't have to divorce her. Now she's going to be a zona. So this is what supports Rashi's understanding that the problem here is zona. Now, zonah taktav, does that mean that she's going to be a zonah now? And that's what they're afraid of? Because her behavior as an achrit, she will act like a zonah now, and that's what the issue is? Or she's already classified as a zonah? It's not clear from the Gemara over here, but what's clear is that she remains with that status or that shame zonah afterwards. Zonah doesn't disappear just because she got married. So that's how they reject it. Rav Safra matni la michlolo. Rav Safra learned out michlala out of an inference. Vikashale. And he had the same problem that we had with the inference. Umashanile. And he gave the same answer that we gave, which is it's different. Zonah is different than the case of Bogeret and Mukatates. And therefore, Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi is saying that it's okay over here. Even if she was married to him, we would force a divorce unless he passed him, like Rabbi Yishuv ben Bar Yochai. So he learned it out of the Michlala. He learned it out of the inference from that statement of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. Even though Rabbi Yaakov Baridi says, I heard it directly from Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. There was an incident in which a kohen married a giyoret who was less than 3 years in one day. How are you letting this go on? So he said to this man, this kohen who had married this woman, he's quoting this statement of Rabbi Yaakov Baridi in the name of Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, the law is like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak challenges him and says, Zilapik, go and divorce her. And if you don't divorce her, Vilo, if not, Mafikna lecha Rav Yaakov Baridi meunich. He says, I'm going to pull Rav Yaakov Baridi out of your ear. That means that, basically, I'm going to put you into Shamta. I'm going to excommunicate you if you don't divorce this woman. Obviously implying that he believes Allah is not like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Tanya, V'chena ya Rav Shimon Bar Yochai Omer. This, what this has to do with their Gemara is very unclear, except for the fact that it's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai as well. It's not clear here why it's involved here. It does involve Kuhuna a little bit, but maybe just they we all said together these halachot. It's not clear why the Gemara jumps at this. The burial of a mate that is a non-Jew is not mitame boel. Shinemar vaten tzuni tzon mariti adam atem. Atem kurim adam, v'ne uvdei kuchavim kurim adam. So over there, the pasuk in Yechezkel tells us that Hashem calls Bnei Yisrael Adam, and therefore by Tumat Oel, where it says, Zot HaTorah Adam Ki Yamut Boel, so Adam is used by Oel, and Adam is defined in the pasuk in Yechezkel as being Bnei Yisrael. That means only Bnei Yisrael are Metame Boel, not Ovdei Kochavim. Meitvei. How is that possible? Back to, and this might be what the connection here is, they asked the question from Benot Midian, they asked the question from the captives of Midian. So that might be the connection to the previous Gemara, is that they're bringing that pasuk. It says, V'nefesh Adam Shishasar Elef, says that they captured 16,000 people. Adam is used in reference to non-Jews. Bishum Behema. Over there is in contrast to Behema. They captured animals and men. So how do you define men versus animals? There you can use the word Adam, even to refer to a non-Jew. Asher yesh baharbe mishtem esrei ribo Adam. That's Ninveh and Yonah. When Hashem is describing Ninveh, that has 12,000 people that don't know the difference between their right and left, and they're not Jews. Bisham Beima. Again, over there it says that Levad Mina Beima. Besides Beima, they have all these people there. So there again, in contrast to Beima, Adam is used to include a non-Jew. Kol Horeg Nefesh, V'ho Nogea B'Chalal Titchatu. Anybody who kills a Nefesh, V'ho Nogea B'Chalal, anybody touches a corpse, Titchatu had to get cleaned. So now, why do they have to get cleansed from their tumah if there's no tumah? Dilma iktil chad mi Yisrael. Maybe there was a friendly fire incident, and that's why they have to become mitahor, is because maybe they killed a Jew or came into contact with a Jew, and that's why. But the Rambam said, how can you say that? The Rabbanan say, lo nifkad mi menu ish. The pasuk says there were no casualties on the Jewish side. They came back, everybody came back from the battle. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, lo nifkad mi menu ish la beira. Nobody was lost in the battle because of their sins. They might have lost in the battle because of the battle, but their sins didn't cause them to be lost. The only thing that we excluded them from was Tumat Oel. Adam ki yamut ba'oel. That's where Adam is used. Mimago masa mi maitin ukra. Whoever excluded them from the pasuk of Magan Masa, which is the Alocha. The Alocha is for sure. In terms of Magan Masa, that a mate of a non-Jew is mitameh b'magah u'masah. The question of ohel is a significant question. If you look in Tosafot over here, Tosafot thinks that the locha is not like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, that ain't a locha like Rabbi Shimon, but like rather like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who argues on him, and they are mitameh b'ohel. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, he brings down the locha, yesh omrim, that there is Tumat Olel be Ovdei Kochavim. Yesh Omim She'ein Tumat Olel be Ovdei Kochavim. V'nahagu l'achmir. And the minhag is that the Kohanim are machmir not to go into Kvarim or over Kvarim of a non-Jew. Tosfos brings a number of questions about Eliyahu Navi. That Eliyahu Navi goes ahead and seems to bury the Meitim or get involved with the Meitim. So the Gemara gives different answers in different places. Some of them assume because there's a Chalal Tefach, so there's an OL over the mate, and therefore it's not a problem. Other Gemara's answer up, Bishim Tzadikim. They're Tzadikim, Veinim Mitameim. So Tzadikim are not Mitameim. This gets into the modern day phenomenon of dealing with going to Marat HaMachpelah and to Kever Rachel, whether Kohanim are allowed to go to these places. So there are those that suggest because they're Tzadikim based on this Gemara that they're not Mitameim, Kohanim can go in. That's a pretty precarious stance, but there are those that take that stance. The other might be this idea of OL Agabe OHEL, which is that there is a OL that has a Poteach Tefach below that stops the Tumah from coming up, and therefore the Kohanim are protected. The Tzitz Eliezer of Waldenberg has a tshuva that says that Kohanim cannot go to Kever Rachel, but then one of his, I think, grandchildren married a Sephardic lineage, and their grandfather, great-grandfather, had a Mesorah that Kever Rachel was built, Kippah Agabe Kippah. So when they renovated Kever Rachel in the 90s, they did some excavations there, and on the edge or around Kever Rachel, they did find another archway that was down below, which would corroborate the statement that it's a Kippah Gabi Kippah. If it's a Kippah Gabi Kippah, it might actually be okay for Kohanim to go there. The Tzitz Eliezer writes a second Shuvah where he retracts his first Shuvah if it's true. It says, if it's true that it's Kippah Gabi Kippah, then Kohanim can go there. I won't change my Shuvah until I know for sure, until there's evidence of the fact. But I'm enough to know that I'm wrong if the circumstances are different. So if it's the case that there's Kippah Gabi Kippah, then the Kohanim would be allowed to go there. The same thing Marat HaMachpelah, which seemingly also is a Kippah Gabi Kippah, because there's a hollow space in the caves down below, which would allow them to go in there because it's an Ohel Gabi Ohel. It's a Kippah Gabi Kippah. The other thing is discussed here in the Tosfot. Rabbeinu Tam discusses it here as well as many other places in Shas. They bring a slew of psukim in which the Adam is used to refer to non-Jews, including one of the most important in the beginning of Vayikra. It says, Adam ki akriv korban, and the Gemara says, Adam l'rabot ovdei kochavim shemevim nidarim nidavot. So there they use the word Adam to include nidarim nidavot. So the Rabbeinu Tam defends today with the word Adam and the word Ha-Adam. And he says that maybe that's a distinction. The Rabbeinu Shalom says that when it's written by Paronot, then Adam refers to Israel, because the Torah doesn't want to write, the Tanakh doesn't want to write Israel, it writes Adam. But when it's not by Paranut, then the word Adam doesn't necessarily mean Israel. So they're all trying to come up with distinctions to reconcile the psukim where Adam means even non-Jews, but Adam, that only means Jews. And so they come up with these different solutions, Rabbeinu Meshulam, Rabbeinu Tam, about how to differentiate in these psukim to deal with the fact that it's not consistent throughout Tanakh, that Adam always means B'nai Yisrael. Okay, we'll stop over here by the Mishnah on Samach Aleph Amid Aleph.